Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going well. I'm a little bit frazzled. as usual, when we record, I'm like frantically trying to get to the podcast, and our kids started school last week, and today is the first Monday, and it was a CrossFit day, and I worked late, so then I was late to CrossFit, now I'm late to the podcast, and tomorrow's my birthday, and...
Oh, happy birthday!
Thanks.
Yeah, you've got one or two things on your plate.
Just
one or two.
Well, the kids are really excited because our copy of the Spunky Coconut Kelly, Paleo Lovers Chocolate Cookbook arrived, like, just in time for my birthday. I really genuinely thank Kelly for making sure that this arrived in time for my birthday, because I haven't been eating a lot of treats, but I'm going to totally eat a treat tomorrow. So we just spent, like, yesterday and today paging through the book trying to decide what to make, and we all decided as a group that for breakfast we were going to make the French toast stuffed with chocolate. So I'm super excited about breakfast tomorrow.
Yum! Yeah, I haven't seen the book yet, so I don't know if I'm getting a review copy or not, but just from what I've seen, it looks awesome.
Well, it would be hard for you to do a review because you don't do chocolate, right?
Well...
You're like, I would need to do the review.
I've actually tried a little chocolate in the last couple weeks, and I was okay with it. So, I'm always, with reinjections like this, I'm always very cautious because I realize that a small amount occasionally tolerated does not mean that I can then go and eat it every day. Mm. But I've actually been doing really well with eggs and most nuts and seeds and even some chocolate. Pretty much the only thing that is like an absolute no-no for me right now is nightshades. I'm pretty stoked about it, actually.
It's about where I am. As long as I do organ meats and broth and I moderate those other things and avoid nightshades, I'm fine.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm certainly not, you know, I'm not eating a lot of those things. I'm not eating eggs every day. But if I eat some eggs on the weekend, I seem fine. And I actually even had a cup of coffee on Saturday.
Nice. That's the and first time in like 1984.
Yeah, it was the first time in 15 months.
Wow.
Not that I'm counting. And it was awesome. I got high on it. Like, I literally felt, like, about halfway through, I was like, oh my goodness, I feel like I've been consuming a drug, which I guess I have been. But I took a break from my coffee, went to the farmer's market and did all my shopping. I'm sure I was safe to drive, everybody. And then came home and then reheated the cup and finished it then. And then the tricky part was, because it was so wonderful because I really love coffee, mm-hmm. was to not have it the next day, mm-hmm. right? Because what I know about coffee is once in a while, I mean, unless you have a sensitivity to it, once in a while, it should be fine. And that the pro-inflammatory properties are more like if you have it every day. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and get to a place where I can have it like one morning on the weekend and, you know, and have my like Sunday morning or Saturday morning coffee. So then it was, yeah, the trick was, and I'm already like trying to find excuses to have it again. So clearly have a problem with coffee.
I think we all have a problem with coffee. Depends on if you define it as a problem or not.
Right, right.
Some of us just call it a habit, although to
some
admit,
of us just call it comfort in a cup.
I don't actually have a coffee habit, I'm proud to say. I'll have a cup of coffee maybe 4 times a week, and I don't consider that a habit because I have it at different times and depends on, you know, what I want and if I, you know, want it or not. I've actually been enjoying matcha, which I think I mentioned before. I think my body's craving the antioxidants, and so I've been having that a lot lately. But
so I think I would have the same issue where I don't think I could actually handle that every day. But I'm still, to me, it's just great to know that I can have an occasional treat and not have my efforts completely derailed. So, you know, it's good. I've been working on healing my body for a very long time now. And, it's nice to be finally seeing that come together.
For sure.
So how was Baconpalooza? Who won? That was, I mean, not that it was a competition and we care who won.
This is a good transition because speaking of nightshades and healing my body, I made it public on Instagram or somewhere, something I had that weekend. And I'm not saying it was at Baconpalooza because we did eat food like on the road and, you know, whatever. But something that I had that weekend gave me like a violent reaction.
Oh, no, that's awful.
Yeah, it was pretty sucky for me. So the second day I was kind of like my joints, I had to take my wedding rings off because my joints were so swollen. It was pretty awful. So, but the first night was really awesome. Amy and I were going to go down early to do like the whole thing wasn't just called Baconpalooza. It was like 3 events in 1. And the first was a Polyface tour. And then it was Baconpalooza that evening. And then the next day was called P3. It was like Paleo Pork and Polyface or something like that.
Yeah.
And so we were going to do the whole event, but then Amy and I have actually already toured Polyface, and we decided that it was just too much to try to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning and make it there on time and not forget something for the stuff that we had to serve that evening and all that kind of stuff. So Amy and I wadded that morning, and we did like a really intense CrossFit workout followed by a yoga workout by our friend Seema, who does yoga that I mentioned before when George was here, is like not just your mama's yoga.
No, she's intense.
Yeah. So I actually like totally chickened out of some of the intense parts of it and sat on the sideline because I was like, yeah, my arms are still numb. I don't know about you guys, but I cannot plank right now. So we did that, which was awesome. I felt really good about myself for getting my weekend training in. And then we got on the road and got there. The hotel was really nice, and everybody was there except Russ. And I was like texting Russ from the Domestic Man, you know, like I would say a good friend of our families at this point. We know Russ and his wife and his adorable son pretty well at this point. And I was like, Russ, like, where are you guys? Why aren't you here yet? Like, we're setting up, right? Like, we're all like getting our dishes out and starting to set up. And he's like, I'm still an hour out. So I wasn't even sure Russ was going to make it. Turns out Russ not only made it, he rocked Baconpalooza so hard that none of us had a single chance at all.
Oh, I heard him describing his dish, and I mean, even just thinking about it now, I'm salivating.
It wasn't, like, I thought of this as, like, an amuse-bouche, right? Like, I was thinking tiny little bite, and what's the easiest thing I can do? The easiest thing I could do was, like, cut an apple on site, smear some bacon jam on, and smile at people. And it worked for me. Like, I enjoyed being able to talk to people and not have to work too hard. Mostly I put Amy to work because she's nice. That's me. Talk to people and helped with the bacon jam and was very, very nice and helpful.
And she wears gumboots like a pro, too.
Yes, she does. Right? Those are so cute.
They were. You, both of you were rocking the gumboots.
Thanks. Well, she wore hers with cute little socks, and I was totally jealous because I was like, I didn't bring any socks. So, but Russ's table was right next to ours, and when they get there and they pull out, like, I'm not kidding you, Top Chef restaurant accoutrement. Like, they've got not just, like, some people had, what do they call those? Not Bunsen burners. What do they call those things that are like gas things?
Sterno.
Yes. Okay. So some people.
Okay. Got it.
Some people have sternos to like keep their food warm or whatever. Russ shows up with like a restaurant in a bag. He pulls out, I'm not kidding you, like an electric stovetop, only it's not electric. It's like running off of some sort of battery or gas or something he's brought himself because there is no electric for us to work with out there. And he is literally like multiple cast iron pans, pan searing this pork belly to order on top of his like parsnip puree, which has been creamed with lard, I assume. And no, maybe I think actually it was butter. And then on top of that, he made a beet chip fried in lard and put that on top, and then used like fresh arugula with Tessemé's lemon garlic, which is like my favorite thing ever. And he put that on top of the pork belly, and it was like a meal. It wasn't like it wasn't a mouche bouche, but it was like, I will take 8 plates of that. Thank you. And I think I did have 8 plates of it. I was right next to him. And so I'd be like, and this one's for Amy. And I wouldn't give it to Amy. And this one's for me. And this one's for Amy. It was really, really good. And when people were coming to my table, I was like, you don't need to try Russ's. Just, you like mine. Just write down on your paper right now before you go to this next table. Like, you're good. Just write it down. But I was not successful in my thwarting. Evidently, he won by a landslide. Go figure. So I can't even pretend that it was a close race. Russ is what they call the Baron of Bacon. He beat us all, and well-deserved on his part. He clearly planned and worked hard for it and made a fantastic dish. So I think he said he's going to put the recipe up on his site in the next couple of weeks. So,
oh, cool, because I have a giant pork belly in my freezer.
Yeah, people need to check that out and make it because it was amazing. So, yeah, that's and then the next day, so then they did a movie screening after the like pork tasting event, and the next morning kicked off like the P3 conference, and Rob Wolf spoke, Joel Salatin spoke, Jenny, I can't remember her last name, from Nourished Kitchen spoke. And it was just really nice. You know, we had breakfast with kind of blogging friends and hanging out with people and that sort of thing. So it was good. And I think the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund raised a good amount of money. And, you know, progress is kind of really being made on the front of farmers being able to reach consumers at reasonable prices. I think we've all seen the availability in, you know, healthfully raised, pastured, real food available to the public in the last couple of years. And it's, you know, in no small amount due to organizations like the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund and other people kind of putting information out there and protecting the rights of the farmer so that they can get to the people without Monsanto shutting them down and making it impossibly expensive for them. So good to support good cause. And supposedly it was so successful that Rob told them he wanted to do it again next year. So everybody should plan ahead, and, you know, you're welcome to visit my home state, make a longer trip out of it and come up to Washington, D.C. There's lots to do and see here, really good restaurants. And the Shenandoah this time of year is just gorgeous. Everybody who was there that was from out of town was like, we couldn't believe how gorgeous it is. The unfortunate thing is it's like 3 hours from the nearest airport. So you will enjoy that drive, my friend.
3 hours isn't the end of the world.
No, it's not. And the traffic isn't bad, and it's a beautiful drive. And anyway, so that's why if you fly into Dallas or Reagan, you make a few more days, just stay up there. Museums in D.C. are free. So anyway, I don't know why I'm peddling this to you because I don't even know what the date is next year. All I know is
but I will not be working on a book next year.
Yeah.
I say that. I say that now.
If Russ set the standard, I don't know that we can compete.
Maybe I'll just go and hang out. I don't need to cook.
Yeah.
So cooking.
I'll let Russ cook for me any day. This is 90% why we're friends. Every time he comes to a potluck, I'm like, just put Russ's aside. I'll eat it. Just put it on. No, you guys don't need this. I'll just take Russ's food. It's really good. So I highly recommend you check out thedomesticman.com because his recipes are all fantastic. Is that I overkilled that? So how was your weekend?
There's no such thing. My weekend, it was actually really good. I've gotten to a place with the book that I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, which has done really, really wonderful things for my emotional well-being. And I had a really productive weekend working on illustrations, and I've only got 8 left to do. So that's like really, really exciting for me. And we did have a meeting this afternoon. This is like hot off the presses news because this news is only 3 hours old.
But I don't even know what you're about to say.
You don't even know what I'm about to say. I know. And you're like the third person to know it too. So we've known for a while that the book was going to have to be delayed. Because if it was going to come out by its release date, it would have to have been at the printer last week. And it's not. But we actually had a meeting today and figured out where we were at with all the different steps and all the things that are going on simultaneously that normally would not be done simultaneously. Basically did some not very complicated math, although it seemed complicated at the time, to figure out when the book is actually going to be released. And we are going to take a page from Chris Kresser, and the book is going to be released Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I'm really excited. For me, that means we're getting it to the printer in 6 weeks, and that's going to be a really, really busy 6 weeks for where we're at right now. But it's also, it feels doable. And we really wanted, because it's such a big book, we really wanted to make sure that we weren't rushing any of these steps, right? We didn't want to rush copy edit and have it published with typos. And we don't want to rush the graphic design and have it not look good at the end. So I feel like really, really positive about that. And I'm really, really glad that we were able to squeak it into the fall season because that's when it was promised. And, I know people are really impatiently waiting for it. And believe me when I tell you that I feel your frustration because it's just been the longest, longest process for me. It'll actually go to the printer almost a year to the day from when I started writing it. And it's just been like the craziest, most exhausting year. And I'm really looking forward to, having it out there. So I hope that people can be patient for 2 more months. I'm thinking, Christmas Eve, that means it'll be a great Christmas present and it'll be, out right on time to get it and start studying it for New Year's resolutions. And, we're working on some fun stuff we can do around that in terms of, promoting the book, but also really getting that sense of community around the book going, because I think that's one of the things that's really, really helpful for people when they're looking at making big life changes is feeling like they're not the only ones. So I've got a lot of ideas that are still in the early phases, and I can't tell you all about them until I've figured out the details, but I've got some really, really cool stuff in the works to be timed with the release of that book. So, and then the cookbook is going to be 3 months behind it. And that was basically just based on what I can physically do with 24 hours in a day. So you know, the cookbook is really close to being done, but I can't put any effort into finishing it until this book goes to print. And so that just, oh, okay, well, you know, it should be really relatively quick to put together, and it will be more of a normal editing graphic design process compared to the Paleo Approach, which has just been so, like, it's just overwhelmed everybody. Like, every single person has said, wow, this step would normally take me 10 days, and it's taken me a month and a half, just because the book is so, it's just so comprehensive. And it's, while it's still, I mean, I consider it sort of a popular science book, and I've put a lot of effort into making the explanations approachable. It's still a much more technical book than this publisher's ever published. So making sure that everything is right so that those explanations are easy to understand and it has the right illustrations to reinforce the concepts rather than confuse the reader. And all of that is just taking time right now. But I feel really good about it. Like, I just, you know, I think I knew a couple weeks ago that it was going to have to be late. And so, you know, having this, you know, I've got a firm date. I can tell people it's going to be out Christmas Eve, and it's really starting to come together, and I'm really excited about it. I think it's just going to be beautiful, and I think it's just going to be like an amazing resource for people, which was the whole point. Like, that for me, that's what I wanted to write, was this complete resource for somebody with autoimmune disease that just, you know, not only tells them what to do, but explains why. And so that wasn't the question you asked me, but that's what's going on with the book.
No, that's cool. I'm glad you know all that and that you're feeling better. I can tell, and I'm sure our listeners can tell, that you seem to have a little more pep to your step lately.
I feel so much better, but part of that is some other changes that I've been making in the last like week and a half.
You like how I set up that segue for you?
Yeah, that was really good. I like that. So I hit the point again a couple weeks ago where I got a really bad cold after AHS is what happened, and I wasn't getting better. And I wasn't getting better because I was staying up really late to work on the book, and I wasn't, you know, getting out and doing any kind of activity whatsoever other than, you know, walking on my tread desk for what I could do. I can't actually illustrate while I'm walking on the tread desk, so now that I'm doing so much illustration work, I'm sitting again more. And so I just hit this point where I was like, you know, I've now realized that I'm not in the last 2 miles of a marathon. I'm at mile 16. And if I don't pace myself now, when I hit the wall at mile 20, I'm not going to make it through. And I put sleep right back up on my priority list and started going to bed an hour to an hour and a half earlier than I was, which is still probably later than would be ideal for me. But I'm noticing that I feel so much better because of that. And I put activity way back up higher. But because my week is structured basically so that I have childcare at certain times, and that's when I get to work on the book and the blog, those used to be also happen to be the times that I would normally go to a yoga class or go for a walk. So I don't have the same same opportunity to do those activities that would be my staples. So I've had to be a little bit more inventive and change it up. And so I've made two big changes. And the first one I call healthy habits mini breaks. And what I've done is I've set a bunch of alarms in my phone with like corny kids music. And I'm taking, you know, 4 or 5 times a day, depending on my schedule, to just take 2 minutes to do something. And I'm actually finding the last 2 days that I even want to do it more frequently than I have the alarms. So the something it would be, I try and do one that's a set of something upper body exercise-ish. So I might do push-ups or body rows or dips or something like that. And then I do one set that is core strength. So I might do boat pose from yoga or elbow plank. Or I might do some eagle crunches. I don't know if you know what those are.
Nope.
It's another yoga thing where you cross your legs and cross your arms. You do yoga eagle pose. If you Google eagle pose, you'll see the way you cross your arms and completely overlap them and cross your legs. And then you basically bring your knees and your elbows together and then take them apart, and it's really, really intense. So it's probably the most intense crunch I can imagine. So I do something like that. And then the other one, I either do something that's sort of like a full body, like burpees, or more lower body, like squats or lunges or something like that. And then I've just recently discovered that I really like jumping. Does that sound dorky? I really like jumping. So
I've had 3 children. Me and jumping, it's an interesting relationship, I'll tell you that.
Okay, that's an aside that I don't have that experience. I can jump. I really enjoy jumping. So I've pulled out one of my daughter's jump ropes, and it turns out that jumping is a lot easier than jump roping. And so it's become my like obsession to get better at jump roping. I know that's kind of, so I literally will like we're talking like I maybe have 45 seconds worth of jump roping stamina in me. My heart rate skyrockets because it's basically the same as sprinting. And then I'm like totally done and I just put the jump rope away. So like these mini breaks are literally taking me 1 to 2 minutes. I have one mini break during the day where I meditate for 5 minutes. And I have like a song that I play that's just it's meditation music and it's 5 minutes long. So I just meditate for the length of that song. By meditate, I'm doing mindful meditation, which basically means I sit and do some kind of complicated breathing exercise. So I'm focusing on my breath, which makes it really, really hard to think about anything else. And I have, for the first time in months, just doing that, I'm starting to notice myself getting stronger again. Whereas, you know, through most of the summer, every time I had the opportunity to do an activity, I was noticing that I was losing strength or losing flexibility or losing cardiovascular conditioning. And I was getting more and more frustrated at that. So I'm really like just in that short period of time doing, I mean, it's maybe 10 minutes total in the whole day. I'm already seeing some of it come back. And then the other change is another big one for me is I'm taking a couple mornings a week to push my youngest in the stroller for a run after I drop my oldest off at the bus stop. And I've done 2. I went Friday morning and this morning and noticed a huge difference in how I felt. I did the same run about 2 miles. And I did the same run today as I did Friday. And I just, in about the same amount of time, actually, I wasn't any faster today, but I felt so much better. And my energy has just been like amazing all day. So I'm not trying to have any numbers goals with this because I don't want to be pushing my body too hard, especially with everything going on with the book. But it feels so good to know that I'm carving out that time for myself and my body just feels so happy about it. It's not just like, it's for me, it's not just the physical activity of getting into better shape. It's the stress reduction and the hormone regulation. My sleep is better. My mood is better. I just feel more like myself. Like I'm normally an optimistic, bubbly, you know, person. And I've been more that person in the last week than I probably have been in the last 6 months. And I think it's really, you know, part of it is just hitting that point where I went, okay, I'm putting myself first for a little while and I'm still going to fulfill my other responsibilities, but this is what I'm doing. And I have to thank you because a huge part of my motivation for wanting to focus more on my own physical health is watching your accomplishments over the last few months, training. Aww. And taking up CrossFit. I'm taking up CrossFit like when you were still working on the book. Like, I mean, really like amazing. You're an amazing role model. And it's about time I actually, you know, like instead of telling people, hey, Stacey's an amazing role model, actually, you know, changed something in my own life because of, you know, just how inspiring your journey into this sort of new phase of your health has been.
Oh, I'm like melting over here. Well, I'm glad that I inspired you. I know I'm inspired by many people too. I have, you know, friends in my life that inspired me. I wrote a post last week that was an update on my training, which I promised in the last podcast. And I showed pictures of my friend Courtney, who inspires me. She's started doing Olympic lifting competition, and she's what kind of made me think, huh, I maybe could compete in something because I'm strong. And my friend Amy has just always inspired me. The whole reason I even joined Instagram is because Amy was doing cool yoga poses, and I was like, I want to try to do cool yoga poses. And she was following people on Instagram, and it was like pose of the day. And I switched to CrossFit, and then she switched to CrossFit, and now neither of us do much yoga, but I'm still on Instagram. So, yeah, I think for me, I had that adrenal meltdown with hitting an autoimmune flare and stopping nursing Wesley and stress and cortisol and all that kind of nasty stuff from Eat Like a Dinosaur. And that flare was so severe that it literally took a year of my life. You know, it made me question things that I was doing health-wise. And I was like, well, what am I doing wrong food-wise? And I did realize that I shouldn't have been so low carb, and I shouldn't have been intermittent fasting, and I should have been paying more attention to, you know, not eating foods that were so rich in fat that were causing me to not absorb nutrients. And that year of my life, kind of recovering from that autoimmune flare, made me realize a lot of things about my health and my body. And what I realized was that I like feeling strong, and I like feeling like I've accomplished something. And my whole life, I always saw exercise as this thing that I couldn't do very well, and I always finished last in class because I've always been obese and overweight, and I always felt like people were watching me and being awkward and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I never really thought of exercise or movement positively. And finding a place where you feel comfortable and you feel encouraged and you feel supported is just so important. And for me, that happens to be at Nova Strength and Conditioning. For somebody else, that could be in a yoga studio, or it could be, you know, taking a walk around the block with their friends. Whatever it is where you feel like you're, you know, you want to go do it because it makes you feel good, that's what you need to find. And I didn't realize until I started CrossFit that I could have that. Like, I thought that exercise was this thing that you had to do in order to, you know, be healthy, and you just, you know, kind of slugged along and was miserable, and then you were done. And, you know, I really look forward to working out. I really look forward to feeling jazzed after. Like, I don't know how to, I know it's a hormone thing, I'm not saying, I know it's not all mental, but, you know, you get a rush, not just from the physical hormones, but, you know, for me personally, every time I do something in the gym that I thought I couldn't do, or the last time I tried to do it, I did it not as good. You know, in particular, lifting weights is really rewarding for me, because every time I put more weight on a bar, I feel accomplished, and I feel like, yeah, I did that. I built strength, and I'm gaining health, and I'm, you know, I'm not going to have osteoporosis because my bone density is going to be fantastic. there's so many things to feel good about if you find a thing that works for you. And I never would have imagined that I could have posted my, you know, obesity underwear photos on the internet when I started my blog. And I'm getting choked up. Like, if you would have told me 3 years ago that I'd be posting photos of myself in workout gear looking sweaty and gross, I would have told you, no way am I putting that on the internet where hundreds of thousands of people will see it.
I would have said sweaty and radiant, by the way.
Well, that's nice that you see me that way. One does not see themselves that way after a CrossFit workout.
Well, you know, a photo does not transmit smell.
Yeah. I took a photo with one of the girls that I work out with today. Her name is Maria. And we were like hugging each other while someone was taking our photo. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you smell better than me. And she laughed. I was like, anyway. So my point is that, you know, like, if you would have told me years ago that I would be wearing spandex shorts and posting my photo on the internet looking sweaty with my hair frizzy and my makeup melting off my face, I would have told you you're insane and it's never going to happen. And yet here I am almost on a weekly basis, happily posting photos of myself, asking people in the gym, can you take my photo while I do this thing? Because I want to encourage and inspire people to find what I found that makes me happy and feel good about myself. And I'm finding health, and it's really, really been a struggle for me for the past year and a half to remain an overweight person as a paleo leader. Like, that's been very hard for me to say, I'm healthy and this might be all that it is. And part of coming to terms with that for me has been gaining muscle and gaining strength and being able to kind of cognitively point at something and saying, like, I am obviously doing something right because my body is changing, and it might not be changing the way that I want it to be, but, you know, I need to remember that when I was 16 years old, this is what I weighed, and this is, you know, what my body needs to stay at for me not to mess up my hormones, which I think I've mentioned before. You know, my sleep, my digestion, my menstruation all get messed up if I try to eat less calories to lose weight. And so for me, being able to kind of say, you know what, I'm just going to focus on getting strong, and I'm going to focus on being healthy and taking time for me, and I'm not going to feel guilty when I take, you know, time to go to the gym every day is been something that I can point to try to make me feel better about the fact that I'm not losing weight, that I'm not getting skinny, which is what I, you know, I think we all kind of want at some point. I set out on paleo to be healthy, and I found health. And once you find that, and once you lose 100 pounds and you forget how big you were and how unhealthy you were, and it's been a year, and then one morning you look in the mirror and instead of seeing the progress that you've made, you see the progress that you still want to make. And, you know, when that flip got switched in my head, or when that switch got flipped in my head, it started being really negative and hard. And, you know, like, admittedly, Matt and I debated about quitting being leaders in the paleo movement because to us, it was more important to be mentally healthy and to raise a happy family than it was to kind of be this beacon for people. And we felt a lot of pressure to be beacons for people, and we felt like hypocrites. And for the first time in a long time, when we started CrossFit in January, we don't feel like hypocrites anymore. We feel like, you know, we've got a message to share, and we're learning a new message, and we're on a different journey, and we're happy to share that with people. So it really touches me when people tell me that I'm inspiring them to start CrossFit or to start lifting or to be more active, because I'm like, that's exactly what I needed. And it really helped me that Amy and Courtney did that for me. And I'm happy to do that for other people. So, oh my God, I'm a freaking mess.
Yeah. Ditto. You're awesome. You know, I think one thing that is probably important to focus on for people who are trying to figure out what changes that they can make to improve their own health, you know, you've found CrossFit. For me, I've always enjoyed running. I mean, I actually ran a couple of marathons in my early 20s, and not that I have any aspirations to run a marathon now, but I really enjoy running, and I really enjoy yoga. So for me, those two things in my life are really, really special. They're fun. And I think the takeaway message for people would be, you know, find what's fun and enjoyable for you and makes you feel good. Because if you can find something fun, you're far more likely to make room for it in your life than if you are, you know, trudging through a workout at the gym or, you know, going to that fitness class because that's what your friend likes to do. Or, you know, going for a run because, you know, that's, you know, what your spouse wants to do. You know, finding what you love and what you find fun and what makes you feel good physically and emotionally is really the key here. And I think it's okay if you try different things and if it's sort of a, you know, journey to figure out what those things are for you. Does that make sense?
Totally. I'm sorry, I'm eating chicken.
Because you just got home from CrossFit.
Oh my God. Okay, so now that I just cried, I'll try to make some jokes. You know how we had Joel on and we talked about how chicken wasn't the best thing to eat and we never ate it?
Are you on a chicken kick?
Oh, like, chicken breast is one of the most, like, high protein foods you can eat. Like, and I'm trying to get more protein in to build more muscle. I really don't like chicken breast. I really don't. I gotta figure something else out.
Well, you know what my new thing is? Mahi-mahi. It's sort of a white, it's a white fish that's
I'm
on
like
the oilier
8,000%
side.
Sure that that's not nearly as protein dense.
But it's much more digestible protein, and it's actually fairly lean. So it is quite, it is, I mean, it's not as lean as other white fishes, but it's way leaner than oily fishes. Fishes? Yeah, fishes. I stand by that. And it's more digestible. Fish is more digestible protein. So it's easier on your digestive system and more readily assimilated into your muscles. So that is like our new, my new discovery is mahi-mahi.
Yeah. So Sarah, I'm actually like legitimately interested in this protein thing. And I know you had something else planned for Science with Sarah, but would you mind maybe doing this thing for me and talking about what protein I can eat other than chicken breast? Because I don't want to eat it as much anymore.
Oh, because it's your birthday, yes, tomorrow. It's your birthday tomorrow.
Yeah,
sure.
It's like almost my birthday, just a couple more hours.
Consider it an early birthday
present.
My
mom was already in labor right now.
Okay, definitely. An early celebrating however many years since your mother was in labor with you. Actually, that sounds like a really good thing to celebrate. I'm going to try and talk my kids into that.
I have friends that I give labor gifts to, like on their kids' birthdays.
That's awesome. I should definitely get presents on my kids' birthdays.
Yeah, because, you know, why not?
I should get them every day for 4 days before my oldest's birthday, since I was in labor for 97 hours.
Horrifying. Don't terrify the women who are pregnant. Just tell me about the protein.
Okay, protein. Science with Sarah. Got it. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. Science. Okay, so special request from Stacy is explaining digestible protein versus less digestible protein. And really what this boils down to is the different balances of amino acids and the different ways that they chain together in proteins in different kinds of animals. And there's actually not as big a difference between, say, animals that walk on land, like cows or pigs or bison, and animals that fly, like birds or geese, as there is between both of those things and animals that live in water. So fish, shellfish. That's all I got is fish and shellfish. And so the way that amino acids are strung together in fish makes it easier for our bodies to break down. So it just so happens that there's this really strong compatibility between the way that those proteins are put together and our digestive enzymes. So that means that it's less work for our bodies to break those proteins apart. A lot of them tend to be shorter proteins, so that helps too. And then what happens is you have to break a protein into individual amino acids for those to be absorbed across the gut barrier and into your body. So you actually absorb the protein or the amino acids that were the protein from fish faster than you do from land animals. But it's also really important to emphasize that the protein digestibility of poultry and land animals is still much, much higher than the than how easily digested plant proteins are. And this is one of the, you know, big arguments for including animal proteins in our diets, is because those proteins, they are complete proteins, so they have all 20 amino acids, as opposed to plant proteins, which may have all of the essential amino acids, the ones our bodies can't produce but don't actually have all 20. And even though our bodies can actually convert one amino acid to another, for the non-essential amino acids, that process is not particularly efficient, and it's much, much easier on our bodies to just supply our bodies with all 20 essential or all 20 amino acids, the 8 or 9 essential, depending on who you talk to, and the rest of them. So there's actually something called a protein, I believe it's a protein bioavailability score, and some nutrition databases will actually have that. I think Nutrition Self has it as part of its data for all of its all of the foods that are in that database. And you can actually look and see, and it'll give you a score based on, there's also a protein completeness score, which basically tells you if it has all 20 amino acids. And then there's a bioavailability score, which basically tells you how easy that protein is to digest. And so if you're looking for really, really fast protein, or if you have like digestive issues, any kind of gastrointestinal symptoms because of, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's a chronic disease or if it's just sort of undiagnosed, something's not quite right.
Or because you're Stacy.
Who has a celiac disease, which definitely counts as a disease affecting digestion.
Yeah, no gallbladder.
Which also qualifies. You got a third one because, you know.
Good. I have 3 kids. That counts there against me, right?
That, sure. Okay, we'll go for that.
Sorry.
So you know, fish, in addition to being like an amazing source of vitamins and minerals, and it tends to be rich in glycine, which of course is why we like bone broth. Fish has lots of it. Shellfish has lots of it. High in some really important minerals that tend to be deficient in the human diet. High in fat-soluble fats, especially A and D, which tend to be deficient in the human diet. And tend to be the best food sources, unless you eat brain. The best food sources of the long chain omega-3 fatty acids, DHA and EPA, which are the omega-3 fatty acids that our bodies actually use. They're also really digestible protein, which is why traditional cultures that ate a lot of fish were so healthy. Whew. All that just off the top of my head.
Nice. So the amino acids,
mm-hmm.
Is this also related to like the omega-3s? Because I always just think of fish as being like, yes, everything that you've said, but super healthy because they have a much higher omega-3 ratio. So I'm just wondering, like,
this is a whole separate benefit to fish.
Wow. See? I don't know. Nothing. All right. Well, so what I'm hearing you say, and you haven't actually said it, so I'm not going to say it.
I'm going to say, if you don't like chicken breast, don't eat it. Eat some fish instead.
Wait, it's not that I don't like chicken breast. It's just that, you know, for all the reasons that we've talked about before. It's expensive.
It doesn't have omega-6. Yeah, it doesn't have the greatest omega-3, omega-6 ratio.
Yeah, and you take one life for one meal rather than, you know, a cow.
Depending on what kind of fish you eat, you may or may not be... I mean, if you're eating something like halibut or cod, I mean, those are giant fish. So that does
tuna.
But if you were eating smaller fish... I don't know how big mahi-mahi actually are. But
so what's the most affordable fish? Because I'm not the expert. I like smoked salmon. I already do broth for breakfast every morning, so I'm good there. So I'm trying to think, like, what are some affordable fishes that I can do, especially, like, post-workout? Because that's when I eat a chicken breast, is post-workout.
So I think typically whitefish is cheaper. I think that... Tilapia is typically very cheap. That is one of the few fish that aren't super high in omega-3s, but it still has like a 1 to 2 omega-3 to omega-6, which is still like ideal for human health. So, and you don't get wild tilapia. Like, it's pretty much all farmed tilapia.
If Kendall was here, she'd tell me I need aquaponics in my basement.
There you go. You'd have your own tilapia. Tilapia is very cheap. Hake is very, very cheap. And actually, I mostly buy my fish from my local Costco, and hake is $1 per bag cheaper than tilapia, and I think they're like 3-pound bags. And they're the two cheapest fish. Mahi-mahi is a little bit more expensive, but it's a firmer fish, So I really, really like it. And the kids eat it really well. So for me, that's, I typically buy hake or mahi-mahi, also because they're wild caught. And mahi-mahi has a pretty good amount of omega-3 fatty acids. They both do, especially for white fish. Those are probably the cheapest. And then, of course, canned fish.
How fatty are we talking about, though? Because then we're getting into, like, this discussion that I don't want to really engage upon. But post-workout, I do much better with proteins and carbs rather than fats.
White fish, all white fish is very lean.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So I think, I don't think it would be fattier than chicken breast. I mean, I'd have to, like, actually go and compare servings on a, you know, nutrition self, as I just mentioned. But I would be surprised if they were dramatically different.
Thank you, madam.
You're welcome.
I'll consider this my birthday present.
Do you want to do some questions, too? And that could be part of your birthday?
I don't know that that's really counts, but okay. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So we probably haven't said yet that we're actually doing a fitness and recovery show.
Duh. Sorry, everybody.
But our pre-banter probably was a little bit of a hint. Our 40-minute long banter. So our first question is from Lou. I am a medium distance runner. I do 3 weekday runs that are 3 to 6 miles each and 1 long run on the weekends, generally 8 to 14 miles. I've been paleo for almost a month and it's going great. My question is, how should I eat pre and mid run on my long runs? Pre-paleo, I would eat a piece of toast with peanut butter 2 hours before a run and tiny bites of Larabar every mile after the 5 mile mark. Should I continue to rely on carbs for fuel, or should my body be burning fat? I've stuck with the Larabar bits mid-run, but have switched to a half banana pre-run. Am I doing this right? My running magazines are pretty adamant that if a body runs out of glycogen, it begins to use muscle tissue, and I definitely want to avoid that. As an aside, I listen to your podcasts on my long runs, and it's amazing. Somehow, the pace of your banter is exactly my long run pace. It's as if I'm in a great paleo running group with ladies who answer all my questions. Thanks for a lot for everything you do.
Awesome.
That's cool.
I'm glad that someone's not complaining that her run is longer because our banter is endless.
We'd probably take her through the entire run.
I can talk about my personal experience, and then I'm sure you've got some actual answers on this. I, whether because of my personal body or because I don't have a gallbladder or because I used to be obese or who knows what, find that I tried to go high fat, low carb to avoid the whole carb thing because I was scared of carbs for a while. And when I was working out, I would get so gassed and I would not be able to do anything. And I could tell that I was glycogen depleted, even though I was eating a ketogenic diet. And so, you know, everybody's different and a lot of people find success with that. I was having digestive distress. I was having hormone imbalance, which I could tell because I wasn't sleeping well. And I could tell that my cortisol was dysregulated and my adrenaline was definitely not where I needed it to be. And so I have found that eating carbs post-workout and making sure that I've had at least a balanced meal within a couple of hours before working out helps me. So like today I had a salad at lunch and I knew that it wasn't going to be enough. You know, if I have a salad at noon and I go work out at 6:30, I get gassed and I can't lift and I can't row as much and I can't run as far. And I just feel dizzy and it doesn't work. So, I had like 2 spoonfuls, the equivalent of 1 serving of sunflower seed butter. And that worked for me. But, you know, to each their own, that has 7 grams of carbs and 7 grams of protein for what it's worth. So And then post-workout, I definitely, like I said earlier, I can't do fat. And that is maybe because of my gallbladder issues, but I need vegetables and I need protein. And I know when I was visiting Bill and Haley in Philadelphia, not Philadelphia, in Pittsburgh, they were like, no, you're really serious about this vegetable thing. And I really am serious about the vegetable thing because we did a WOD in their garage. And afterwards, I pretty much ate like a giant plate of vegetables. I really need carbs. And I do carbs through what I consider safe starches and regular vegetables. So today, after I got home from work, Matt made me a chicken breast, which I already complained about, and cauliflower rice, and zucchini and mushrooms. And there's just as much veg as there is chicken. So if it were me and I were doing a long run, I would probably choose something like an Epic Bar rather than a Lara Bar, because it's going to have more protein in it. And I know that for me, I do well with a balance of protein and carbs. I, having been obese before, my body doesn't do well on carbs alone, although I'm not scared of them. I've just noticed that I need to moderate my carbs. So that's my personal experience and what I would do. And I really do think it's individualized, as I'm sure, Sarah, you have information on how the body uses glycogen and can operate off of ketones. I do think it's an individualized thing. And as you transition from, you know, what you used to do as a runner eating toast to, you know, finding what works for you, I just encourage you to listen to your body, because that's what I had to do when I started eating for working out. And I've had to just start thinking of myself as an athlete. You know, for a really long time, I thought of myself as like, okay, how do I eat to lose weight? And now I think, how do I eat to build muscle, which is a different mindset entirely.
Okay. So, I mean, I think that...
Are we going to disagree again? Is this 2 weeks in a row? Or are we good?
No, I think we're good. I think we're good. My research on workout nutrition has been completely from the perspective of autoimmune disease, because it's research that I did for my book. And that does change the equation slightly. So the first thing I want to say is that there is a certain amount of self-experimentation that needs to be done, because as you progress on paleo, sort of a month in is a bit early, but it should be starting to happen now, where your body's going to start to work sort of equally happily on fat as sugar. So when that happens, the sort of carb loading before a long distance run and the small amounts of carbs throughout the run won't be as necessary, in part because you'll be accessing stored body fat, and in part because a little bit of fat, especially something like coconut oil, so it's those medium chain triglycerides that are passively absorbed in the body and can be converted very, very easily in your liver into ketone bodies and used for energy. Something like that might be a really interesting thing to play with, but you might want to play with that and still a carb source. One of the things with that sort of pre and post workout nutrition, especially when you're talking about endurance training, when you are doing endurance running, your body diverts blood flow away from all of your internal organs and sends it to your muscles and your brain. And if you think of this from an evolutionary perspective, you would probably be doing those long endurance runs when you were hunting. And so you needed your muscles to be able to work well, and you needed your brain to be able to make snap decisions, because at any moment it was going to get dangerous. And so your, especially digestive organs, become really, really low priority. And so what happens is you divert blood flow, especially away from your intestines, and that can actually cause a leaky gut. So if you're doing endurance training really, really intensely, just the just that act causes a leaky gut. And that's transient. Your body heals that pretty quickly once blood flow is restored. But if you are dealing with health issues, or if you are working it really intensely, very frequently, having food in your digestive tract can actually cause a lot of problems. And it causes, there's actually a kind of allergy that is caused by endurance training. And it's because it, you know, basically makes the gut leaky and allows anything that's in it to get into the body. And there's also, as a runner, she's probably familiar with the gingerbread man, which is also called runner's trots or runner's diarrhea, which is a direct...
That's awkward. Those are really names for that?
Yes.
The gingerbread man?
Yeah, run as fast as you can.
Oh my God.
Yeah, okay, runner's runs.
I just want to apologize to everyone right now.
I recall this because I used to train in a big running group, and I recalled the runners who used to know where all of the bathrooms were along the routes. So we would, you know, be handed our route of, you know, it was a 16-mile run or whatever we were doing together that day, and there were certain runners who had runner's trots every time they ran, and they would just know where all the bathrooms were, and sometimes they wouldn't make it between bathrooms and they'd have to go into the bushes. And so, you know, those are things that are happening because of the diversion of blood flow away from the internal organs. So, you know, especially if you're having symptoms like that, it's pretty well shown in the scientific literature that eating during your run makes it worse. So having solid food during the run, it can make all of that worse. And it's thought that everybody who's training with that kind of intensity and for that amount of time has that same sort of leaky gut reaction, but probably to varying degrees, which is why something like 40% of marathoners actually have this. Like, it's a pretty large percentage of people. It's really common in triathletes as well. And so the recommendation in the scientific literature is to refuel with fluids. And they actually recommend a beverage that is less than 10% carbohydrates, because if you go more than 10% carbohydrates, it affects gastric emptying. And then they also suggest that those carbohydrates come from simple sugars, both glucose and fructose, because fructose actually helps restore glycogen in that type of situation, and that it also contains some electrolytes. So, you know, in terms of sports beverages, a lot of them are higher sugar content than 10%, so you might want to pick one and water it down or do a custom mix. I would definitely recommend getting the book Paleo Diet for Athletes by Lauren Cardane and Joe Friel, because that's going to break that down for you a lot better. And then in terms of pre and post nutrition, you know, I think it's just mostly important that in your day you are getting what your body needs. Research in weightlifters shows that glycogen is restored in your muscles pretty much no matter what you do. And so the whole idea of having to have a post-workout shake to restore glycogen doesn't really bear up in the scientific literature. It looks like glycogen goes back into your muscles kind of, you know, as long as you don't then go starve and not sleep for 3 days. So, you know, I wouldn't rush to eat after a long run. I would give your digestive system a little bit of time to sort of normalize again before eating. I would wait until you feel hungry, and then I would, you know, eat a balanced meal. I also don't think it's particularly good to eat immediately before you're working out. I mean, she mentions that she eats 2 hours before, and I think that's probably a really good amount of time between a meal and starting a long run like that, because most of that is going to have gone through the most important phases of digestion first. But I would definitely recommend a more balanced meal than toast and peanut butter, and try and get some really good quality proteins like fish, so you have some amino acids in your system to work with while you're running, and some slow starches like sweet potatoes or squash or parsnips or plantains or something like that. And then also some fats. And again, you know, I already mentioned coconut oil, but I think, you know, getting that balance beforehand, and again, play with it, because, you know, I don't know if she has any other health challenges that might mean that she wants to play around with, you know, the fat carb ratio of her meal beforehand or the protein fat ratio of the meal afterhand. I mean, you know, we really are all experimenting on ourselves. So, and that's kind of how you do it, how you optimize, is experimenting on yourselves. But hopefully, understanding a little bit about the effects that endurance training has on digestion will help sort of guide those decisions a little bit. You know, I think from an evolutionary perspective, it probably wasn't very often that intense or endurance activities went along with food. You know, it's fairly well understood that hunting was an endurance sport and preserving your life from predators was more of a high intensity sprint, climb, get out of the way type sport. And, you know, probably when you're hunting because you needed food, and you probably weren't eating right before you set out for your hunt because you probably didn't have much to eat. And then when you would make the kill, then you would take at least some time to slaughter the animal to be able, I mean, even populations that would have eaten some of the organs like raw right out of the animal, it still would have taken some time to get those out. And then if you were running, you know, away from a lion, you probably, once you escaped, food was probably not the very next. You probably didn't go, oh, I got away from that lion, I think I need a post-workout shake now. You know, food was probably not the next thing on your mind if you had a near miss and you had that really, really intense activity, you know, followed by a massive dose of cortisol and adrenaline and everything else. So I think that it's kind of, you know, there's two sides to the coin, right? Because we do need to eat and we do need to fit in activity and we need to figure out how to fuel our lives optimally. But the idea of post-workout carb windows and shakes and, you know, all of those things, I think, don't make sense when you look at evolutionary biology. And I think what makes a lot more sense is making sure that you have the right fuel throughout the day rather than obsessing about timing in relation to exercise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's pretty much the approach I've taken, because in the beginning, I think we talked about, like, do I need a shake? Do I need this? But I have found that, you know, like I said, if I eat at noon, I can't go to a 6:30 CrossFit class without having had anything at all, because I do feel depleted. And so
6.5 hours is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think I go 6.5 hours between meals. I certainly wouldn't then decide probably to do a really, really intense workout.
Right. So then if I did an intense workout without eating, and by the time I got home, it would be more like 8-9 hours.
Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying, like, yeah, I just am cognizant of when was the last time I ate and what kind of meal was it. And if it was a light salad 6 hours ago, I'm going to need something.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. One more?
Oh, sure. Why not? All right. So this question is from Bianca from Woodbridge, Virginia.
I haven't met Bianca at a meetup, by the way. So Bianca, join
peer pressure to go to a meetup. I love, love, love the show and tune every week to stay in the loop of what's new in the paleosphere. I love that. Following my thyroidectomy in 2009, I put on about 25 pounds. Every time I have visited my endocrinologist since September of 2009, I've been prescribed a higher dosage, which makes me think that I'm still not functioning at my normal thyroid levels. I began CrossFitting a year ago and have gained a lot of muscle and strength, which is nice, but I still carry most of my fat in my midsection. I am 5'1" and weigh about 150 pounds. I am a size 6 in clothes and don't look particularly overweight, but I want to see more results. I'd like to know what considerations I should take with my diet since I don't have a thyroid, if any. Also, I'd like to know more or less how much protein, carbs, fat I should be consuming. I am performing pretty well physically, but I would like to lose that belly fat. Is cardio the best way to go here? Lastly, should I supplement with iodine even if I'm thyroidless? Thank you so much for your help, and thank you for the effort that you put into the podcast every week. It's truly a joy to listen to. And as we've said, compliments are a great way to get your question on the show.
Well, this is my problem, Bianca. I don't know that I have an answer for you because I have the same problem. I, however, don't have health concerns the way that you're describing that you still might with thyroid. So I'm going to let Sarah run with that. But if the thyroid wasn't an issue and someone was just writing in and telling us that they were doing well in the gym and they felt good and all of this kind of stuff, I would say eat until you're full and avoid treats, you know, reduce your overall food reward foods, you know, the foods that you eat because they taste good, not because they're nourishing you. And if you still don't lose weight, then relax and enjoy your body. That's what I would say if you didn't have the thyroid stuff. So I'm sure, Sarah, you have something much more eloquent than that to say.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be eloquent. So the problem with a thyroidectomy is that you now have no thyroid. So, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that it's taking 3 years to dial in the right dose of thyroid replacement hormone. But that is probably the reason for the weight gain, is just not being at the right dose of thyroid replacement hormone. And probably getting that dialed in right, or maybe playing with a different source. I know I've heard Chris Kresser talk about desiccated thyroid as a really good source of thyroid hormone. And so I think that, you know, either changing the particular source of the hormone, whether it's synthetic or one of the bioidentical versions, and getting that dose dialed in properly is probably going to make the biggest difference. The other thing is that she mentions belly fat specifically. And belly fat, when we put weight on preferentially in the belly, especially around our organs, that is a classic sign of cortisol issues, which means mismanaged chronic stress. And so the other thing that I would highly recommend is focusing on stress reduction. So that would include a huge variety of things, spending time outside, doing something fun, laughing, cuddling with people, touching people, having social interactions with people, going to bed at a good time and making sure that you're getting enough sleep, maybe taking up something like meditation or yoga or walking or whatever would be a very relaxing activity for you, especially if it's an activity where you're, say, not bringing your phone and checking your email while you're on your walk, but you are really just walking and you're just in your own thoughts. That's much better for your cortisol management than that, you know, everybody knows, everyone's had the experience where they've checked their email right before bed and they've had that one email that's gotten them all upset and then they can't fall asleep, right? The same goes for when you're trying to do something that's designed to be relaxing. And so between those two things, that should probably take care of the weight. It's also possible that she was underweight before she gained the 25 pounds, depending on exactly what was going on with her thyroid before she had the thyroidectomy. So, you know, weight normalization is more what I like to talk about with paleo rather than weight loss, or, you know, it gets really complicated because people who are underweight tend to gain weight. People who are overweight tend to lose weight. And often the weight that our bodies want to be is not necessarily the weight that we want to be. So it may be that you can get some correction by managing stress and by getting your thyroid replacement hormone dose dialed in. You might not lose that 25 pounds, or at least not without an sort of unhealthy level of effort. In terms of iodine supplementation without a thyroid, there are other proteins in the body other than thyroid hormone that have iodine incorporated into them. So your body still needs iodine, even if it's not making its own thyroid hormone. I don't have a really firm answer for you about whether or not you need to supplement, but I don't really think that supplementation should be required if you are getting dietary sources of iodine. And dietary sources of iodine would be anything that comes out of the ocean. So fish, shellfish, or sea vegetables, and things like sea salt or pink salt all have iodine. You know, you could do iodized table salt, but I really don't see the point when you get so many trace minerals when you have natural sea salt and Himalayan pink salt, and you get sort of a more dialed in, balanced ratio of things. So I don't have a really clear answer for whether or not you would need to supplement with iodine. Definitely talk to your doctor about it. But I would think as long as you're getting some dietary iodine, it shouldn't be necessary.
I love the sea veg, sea salt. I feel...
You use kelp salt,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's actually not just kelp salt. It's like the same brand that makes the kelp salt makes something called sea veg, and it's like a mixture of different sea vegetables with sea salt. So it's like a combination of the two. And I find that it has a nice balance of flavor, and I like to put it in my soup every day. And
I'm a big pink salt fan, I have to say.
We cook with Himalayan pink sea salt. Like, that's what Matt salts the food with and stuff. So I feel like you're getting
the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Cool. Well, way to slay it. Yeah, I'm totally with you on the cortisol belly. She didn't mention lifestyle or anything, but oftentimes lifestyle habits can lead to, as we've talked about before, autoimmune conditions for people who are super stressed or type A personalities are more prone to that stuff. So,
and some people who do CrossFit really overdo CrossFit. Like, that's a pretty common story of people who, you know, take CrossFit to that, you know,
it's
6 days
thing
a week.
Like marathoners, right? Like, you see, you see a skinny marathoner with like a bloated belly. You're like, something's not exactly right here. So, yeah. Cool. Well, it was a good one for me. I learned some stuff and I cried on the show, which is always, people love it when I cry. There you go, everybody.
We cried, we laughed.
We have a show.
Yeah, that's it. And we should remind people that we really, really appreciate the reviews on iTunes.
Yes, we do. Well, we appreciate the nice reviews. So if you don't like us, you're probably still not listening. But don't leave a review if you don't like us. But we love it when you leave a review if you do like us. And I also just want to remind people that the contest to win half a hog is still happening. So by the time this airs, you'll have 1 weekend left to cook some recipes from Beyond Bacon. And we posted that giveaway post on our blog. Monica can link to it in the show notes, where we actually have some recipes. You don't have to buy the book to participate. We posted some recipes from the book on the blog and linked to them, so that all you have to do is make a recipe, share the photo on social media, hashtag it Beyond Bacon, and you have been entered to win half a hog from Cook's Pig Ranch. And a couple of people mentioned last week, they were like, can you tell me again where that place is, because it sounds awesome. And just to remind everybody, they are Cook Pigs Ranch in California, and they don't yet ship, but they hope to get that going in the next few months. So I can let everybody know when that's available. And I hope to taste it myself. Honestly, I haven't even tried it, but
I've heard it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I trust George and Pete. Like, Pete's Paleo and George Bryant of Savoy's Caveman Creation love this place. So, clearly, it's going to be good pig, people. Yeah. You know, like, if I'm not the pig expert, those people are.
I was going to take a new picture of my pork rinds, but my three-year-old ate them all.
Hmm. I think you can just reshare the one you did the first time.
Yeah, I'll do that. I also, like, just made a totally huge batch of broth following your recipe.
Mm.
I should take a picture of that. It is, well, and it was like me having soup at your place. I was like, man, this broth is good. I'm going to make it this way now. And yeah, it's good stuff.
So, oh my gosh, I just had a total brain moment. Oh, so I was just going to tell people, you know, if you've made recipes from the book previously and you don't feel like making them again, just that's fine. Reshare them, because there were like hundreds. I think there's like 1,500 or maybe 5,000. I don't know. There's on Instagram, there's a huge amount of photos that have been shared with the Beyond Bacon hashtag, but we can only count them during like the open contest.
I'm going to like reshare all of the recipes I did for my book review.
There you go. Because why not?
Well, yeah.
It all sharing the photo enters you to win half of a hog. So, seems worth the effort to me.
Half of a hog finished on macadamia nuts.
And avocados.
An avocado.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say it again.
See? Avocado. Wait. So you say tour. How do you say...
Tour?
Yeah. That's weird.
You're weird.
You're weird.
You're in my country.
That's true. I will practice my... How do you say avocado again?
No. Keep saying
avocado.
It your way.
Then I sound all British.
We like to know that you're different. So these cues tell us that you're Canadian.
My accent is so watered down. Eventually it'll be gone. And I will sound just like an American.
That's not how Americans sound.
No, it's not at all. But eventually I'll be able to do that and actually sound like an American.
American.
American. Right. Wait, you say it again?
American.
Okay, see, I can't even do it. I sound like
you have
Canadian.
Other things to worry about right
yeah,
now.
No,
don't worry about it.
Rather than my American accent. See, I can't get the mumblish part of it. Can you say it again?
No. All right, everyone. Have a great week and we'll be back.
All right, good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Do you want me to sing happy birthday to you for the bloopers?
Oh, please God, do not.